smartest man alive!
You're gonna die, clown!
And that's what I call a quality A2O.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn!
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the discerning Adam Sandler fan, the show for the fan of the Sandman. I am your host, Wilson Smith, and joining me as always are...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
And we're so happy to have you with us for this episode, this very special episode, where we're going to discuss one of Adam Sandler's seminal... films, a great. I know it's a favorite of mine, and we'll get to talk about it more here. I'm excited to hear you guys' takes on it. But that film, of course, is 2008's You Don't Mess with the Zohan. But before we get into that, of course, it's been a few weeks since we recorded. There's been a lot going on in the world of Adam Sandler, although it's starting to die down. You know, Uncut Gems has been in theaters for about a month, almost exactly a month now.
How much money has it made?
Close to 50.
Woo.
In America only, which is pretty insane. But yeah, close to 50 for that. I'm not sure if it'll end up topping Lady Bird, or maybe it's Hereditary that's the highest grossing for A24. It's either Lady Bird or Hereditary. But Uncut Gems is undeniably like a smash box office hit for them. That's the $50 million is fantastic numbers. And I mean, that's like as much as That's My Boy made, yeah, which was like a $70 million Happy Madison production. You know, it's definitely, it's a huge win for all involved. So yeah, congratulations to the filmmaking team behind that. The big news for Adam Sandler, it's really the absence of news. It's that, unfortunately our boy, Sandman, was not nominated for an Oscar. Yeah, just deal with that on your own time. If you have to pause the podcast and go speak to someone and then come back, we'll be here.
He's not hurting. It's fine.
It's a bummer, but...
What made me feel validated was that the sort of outcry that resulted was pretty swift, and like, and he's been given nothing but love and support from... all kinds of friends, which I think you're about to get into. I'm sorry. Please go on.
Well, it's just like I don't know. I mean, it's the kind of thing where it was always a long, you know, no matter how much we talked about it here and we were sort of rooting for him to finally get this sort of recognition, it was always a long shot, even when he is sort of almost, I won't say objectively, but when he is, by popular acclamation, you know, gives one of the best performances of the year, if not the best.
Did A24, I know that The Farewell did not get anything. Did Lighthouse
got their only nomination, which was for cinematography.
Okay, so not no Willem Dafoe.
No Willem Dafoe. Nothing for The Farewell, nothing for Uncut Gems. Yeah, it was.
And Awkwafina won a Golden Globe.
That's right.
So you think that she could have gotten something, a screenplay for Farewell. Yeah, it was, well, the nominations as a whole were just
I mean, we'll let, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's about, you know, the deficiency of this year's crop of nominated films and you know, film professionals, but we don't give a shit about that because they didn't include The Sandman, so fuck the Oscars, never watch them. You know what, it's better for me because I can go back to my default position of fuck the Oscars. If he had been nominated, I would have had to watch the Oscars.
You know, if they had any smarts to them, even though they failed by not nominating him, they should have like the next day announced that he would be hosting.
Oh my god, that would have been amazing.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, every single person coming up to accept an award is just like, you should be the one. and so of course there were, you know, there were a lot of reactions from just celebrities and, you know, people who, you know, probably know Adam Sandler, who, you know, had nothing but great things to say about him and were dismayed at his snub. But the most notable ones, I would have to say, Adam Sandler himself posted to Twitter, a tweet that basically read like, you know, bad news, no Oscar love for The Sandman. Good news, The Sandman doesn't have to wear a suit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, there was this whole outpour. And he was like, and congratulations to the nominees.
Especially Mama.
Especially Mama. And he tagged Kathy Bates, who I'm just now learning is on Twitter. But tagged Kathy Bates.
She was nominated for Richard Jewell.
Yes. Very, very deservedly, I might add. She's incredible in that movie, and that movie's very good. But she responded in character as Mama, as Mama Boucher, which was especially sweet because she has, not totally to the extent of Bradley Whitford, but she has sort of given hints that in the past that, like, she doesn't understand the Waterboy, like, doesn't understand why it's so popular. Like, she doesn't know, like, she almost didn't take it, and she doesn't really get it.
I mean, she's great in that movie.
She is fantastic in that movie. This is a little presumptuous, but it might be, considering she's also been in one of the highest grossing movies of all time, Titanic, but it could be one of those, like Alec Guinness or Peter Cushing in Star Wars things, where someone's just like, hey, look, it's Star Wars guy, and it's like, you know, I have this long career where I did all these things that I like better. Like, Kathy Bates might have a little, like, oh, I was in Misery, damn it. Like, you haven't seen Dolores Claiborne? but no, that was very sweet. And then at the SAG Awards, Jennifer Aniston, co-star of Netflix's hit film Murder Mystery, she gave the Sandman a shout out. It looked like, I only saw the clip, so I don't know how it was in the context of her remarks, but it looked like she was about to leave the stage.
Yes.
And she like was like, oh, and actually
she won for
Morning
show, and so she talked about that and, like, you know, gave lots of love to, like, Reese Witherspoon, who's her co-star and, like, co-producer, I believe. And then, yeah, basically she was just wrapping up, and then kind of on her way out she was like, oh, and basically it was sort of like her PS, special thanks, special shout out to my buddy Sandler. Your performance was great. And I love that she refers to him as buddy. Like, hey, I love you, buddy. Good job. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's how he talks to his friends too. This is all very sweet. And it was a nice moment. It was unexpected because what she won for had nothing to do whatsoever with Uncut Gems. It was just absolutely her own.
Yeah.
Her own mm-hmm. kindness. And it was a nice thing to see.
I mean, when you have people shouting out, like, that must, knowing nothing outside of, you know, what we can glean from interviews and awards ceremonies and things like that, Sandler must have quite a reputation in Hollywood just as far as being like a dude, because, like, the amount of people, and yes, his work in Uncut Gems is incredible, but the fact that, you know, Jennifer Aniston is going to take a minute to shout out Sandler, I mean, she's being rewarded for a TV show, and, like, this, like, none of the, like, you know, there's no reason for her to do that. No one would have been mm-hmm. like, why wouldn't you shout out your boy Adam? But so for her to do that, for all these other people to be talking about, like, oh, like, Sandler really should have been nominated, I think that it's not an Oscar nomination, but it is a sign of the sort of respect that he commands. And honestly, I feel like 10, 15 years from now, if any of us lives that long, I just feel as though he's going to play like the older gentleman part in, like, something like that, like a prestige drama thing. And it won't be as good a performance as Uncut Gems, but he will get nominated, and it'll be a thing of, like, what, like, this is probably maybe the last movie as far as, like, good, quote unquote, good Adam Sandler movies. This is, like, the last one that I think he had to make for people. Like, no longer can people after this just be like, well, he makes a lot of crap, so, like, right, we're not going to reward him the one or two times that he makes something good. It's like, now that we've
gone through this cycle so many times now to where it's undeniable. It's just willful ignorance if you think that he's just, like, poo-poo guy or whatever.
And idea that, like, I mean, now granted, De Niro was not nominated this year, but the idea, I mean, the amount of love that he got, like, I don't think the reason Robert De Niro didn't get nominated was because he's made, like, Dirty Grandpa. Like, it's not like him being in Godfather 2 and Raging Bull and Taxi Driver overrides the fact that he did Little Fockers. So I think with Sandler, it's like, maybe we're finally reaching like a
mm-hmm.
maximum level of this where it's gonna be like, no, we can't deny this anymore.
I did enjoy the validation, I guess, of kind of like the very, like, quick and instantaneous, like, outcry of different critics and film people online, as well as seeing stuff like Aniston shout out, that kind of thing. I'm like, oh yeah, wait, no, just us three in this little room with our little Sandler podcast, we're not the only ones who were like, if he's not nominated, that's fucking horseshit. Like, like, across the board, consistently, people were like, y'all messed up.
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all messed up big time.
Yeah, and he got so many, like, Critics Circle awards along the way.
AARP.
AARP gave him Best Actor. And then there's also, I still think he's, like, the shoo-in for the Independent Spirit Awards. I don't want to, like,
Jinx it,
but, yeah. I mean, I think there's a really good shot there, which is a very prestigious award in a different...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they give anybody an Independent Spirit Award.
Yeah. Wilson.
It's a little joke, folks.
I thought it was funny.
I can imagine no one listening to the podcast actually knows why I would have an Independent Spirit Award and never talk about it. We can edit all that out. The other piece of Sandler news, much more positive and cool, that we actually forgot to mention last time, is that comedian Tom Sharpling released online, free to everyone, a spec script that he wrote for Grown Ups 3.
And this thing's a piece of work.
And this thing sort of like took the internet by storm for, you know, however long anything can take the internet by storm in this day and age.
For 12 hours.
For 12 hours.
It was the talk of the town.
But man, it is, I highly recommend, if you have not read it, please seek it out. I know here in Austin, it's Cold Town, right? They're going to be they're going to be doing a live reading of it this tomorrow night, this Friday, and it is scarily now. Tom Sharpling, it's crucial, has insisted that he wrote it from a place of love, not a place of like ragging on Adam Sandler or trying to be like, oh, he sucks, ha ha ha, whatever. And I think that comes through in the script itself. But the thing that's amazing about the script is how it both feels like, for big chunks of it, it feels like a very plausible Grown Ups 3, where like the dialogue that, you know, that all the characters have feels like the jokes they're making feel like the jokes in the Grown Up movies, yeah. like to a scary degree. And then when it becomes sort of not in like an eye rolling way, but when it does sort of like become a little bit meta and it's sort of about the perception of Adam Sandler as a guy who just wants to hang out with his buddies and make lazy movies. That's when it kind of that like when that happens, when it hits that level, it's like, oh, this is actually kind of brilliant. And I don't know. I mean, it's not actually a feature length script. It's only like 56 pages or something. You would need to flesh it. I mean, maybe not. It's a Grown Ups movie, but you need to flesh it out a little bit more. But it is the kind of thing where it's like, oh, like if that was the actual Grown Ups 3, that would be like, there would be a lot of retroactive sort of critically reappraising the Grown Up series.
Sure.
But instead we're gonna have to spark that when we review Grown Ups 1 and 2 on this show.
The time is nigh. Like
it's coming.
It's coming. Yeah.
It's rushing up to meet us. It's so crazy to think now we're 2 years. However many movies that is, we're 2 years away in Adam Sandler's timeline from reviewing Grown Ups 1.
Woo!
So like we're hitting it. So yes, everyone go read the script for Grown Ups 3. It's free online. It's great. I don't expect to read a better script this year.
I think there's probably, it sounded like the Cold Town performance of this will be live streamed.
Oh, fantastic.
So people can donate to that. And the New York and LA performances have had like Kevin Corrigan, Chris Gethard.
That's amazing.
John Daly, and like a whole other cast of people that, I mean, pretty incredible. So I can't wait. I'm going tomorrow, so I can't wait to see it.
Hell yeah.
This will be cool.
All right, so I believe, unless y'all can think of anything, I believe that does it for the news roundup for Sandman. So we'll just jump right in. As I mentioned, we are here to discuss You Don't Mess with the Zohan. This film came out in summer of 2008. You know, it's another Sony movie, Happy Madison. Dennis Dugan is back in the saddle. And we actually kind of, I was about to say we go on a run of Dennis Dugan, but that's not true because we have Bedtime Stories and Funny People in between. Yeah, so Dugan is sort of emerging these days as like the front runner. As like he's like Sandler's like go to guy. Like,
sure. If you're gonna make like kind of like a joke about, if you're gonna make a hack joke about hack Sandler, then Dennis Dugan is gonna be a name.
That's what you're thinking of is Dennis Dugan. Yeah. Maybe Frank Caracci, but it's mostly Dennis Dugan.
Yeah.
So Dennis Dugan's back after I now pronounce Chuck and Larry. And this film is actually, you know, last week or last episode when we talked about Chuck and Larry, we talked a little bit about how that script was a different sort of animal until Sandler and his company got their hands on it and they made it more into a Happy Madison movie. You Don't Mess with the Zohan was actually written in 2000, sort of like, you know, Adam Sandler's a superstar, so this is around the time of, like, Little Nicky.
And imagine if, well, if events were a little bit different, and there's a reason why this, you know, movie was pushed off for a bit, but, like, imagine if this, like if he used that Little Nicky clout to make this instead, would it be, like, how different of a movie would it have been? Would it be about the same? Like, that's sort of an interesting what-if scenario to play with, I think.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Because, Little Nicky, as we discussed, is such, like, a, oh, we can do whatever we want. Let's do something crazy. And yeah. They did, for better and worse, they did. And this was their initial concept. But, you know, it's kind of a hot button topic movie, and some world events go down in 2000, 2001, and
yeah,
they pushed it off.
So that is the reason that they gave. Obviously, this film is silly, irreverent take on the Israel versus Palestine conflict. And they wrote it in 2000 and did not make it because of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. And, you know, obviously the political situation became all of a sudden became very, very different, supercharged. It is interesting, not just in terms, you know, the political stuff. It's interesting to think about, you know, if, like you were saying, if they had made this movie, you know, soon after Little Nicky, is this the first character he's playing post Little Nicky? I mean, like the first,
like voice.
the other guys, the other characters are. I mean, his characters in between, like, obviously Mr. Deeds is different from the main character in The Longest Yard by, you know, by virtue of their circumstances and all that. But it's kind of like...
It's like his first, like Sandler does funny voices.
Yeah,
kind of
like,
role.
He's playing, like a character that doesn't, like, you would be surprised to encounter him in real life.
Sure.
As opposed to, you know, the other people.
The only thing that would kind of count, and I'm stretching this pretty, you know, pretty thin, is, like... His character in Chuck and Larry is such like a kind of like a leaning hard into like New York kind of tropes, and he's playing like such sort of like a dog in that movie that we never really saw before or not necessarily again. Like he's definitely doing more of a type and character in that, but it's still he's still somewhat grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean that's kind of that's the closest film I was thinking of, or. Maybe if you stretch it, because there's so many characters he plays in Eight Crazy Nights.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little asterisk because it's animated. And, like, yeah, that's – you're right. That is – and thank God he got those voices out of his system. We don't have to revisit that. But, yeah, this is
technical foul.
First time that he's really been doing, like, a silly voice character, the kind of thing that he was really known for on Saturday Night Live. And – So an interesting thing about I mentioned in the last episode that you know we like to you know keep everyone you know you know remind everyone about our sort of Adam Sandler trajectories over the course of his career. With I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry was the first Sandler movie that I like by choice did not go to see in a theater because I was like over it, like I didn't care. Now what's funny about that is that I did see the next two Sandler movies two of the next three Adam Sandler movies in a theater. And it was because, in both cases, it was because of the involvement of Judd Apatow. So Judd Apatow, along with Robert Smigel, who we'll talk more about, co-wrote this script with Sandler. And Apatow, in 2000... I mean, people our age obviously remember this pretty vividly if you were following comedy. But Apatow... Now I feel like it's the kind of thing that people are reacting against because it became such the standard. Mm-hmm. But Apatow's kind of comedy really started to like his stamp on a movie really did have this like weight to it. Like there, like you know, he was a behind the scenes, like he was like a writer, script doctor for so long. You know, wrote Heavyweights and Cable Guy, and like you know, and he did Freaks and Geeks, obviously.
He worked on Larry Sanders Show.
He does all this stuff.
Ben Stiller Show,
right? And it's like, and so he gets this reputation in like comedy circles, and then he produced the 1-2 punch of he produced Anchorman, and then directed The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and those are about a year apart.
It would also include just the, like, obviously, it didn't make huge, like, public waves, but he I imagine he has, like, lots of, like, critical weight behind him with just the one-off success of Freaks and Geeks.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, that movie, I mean, that show was famously did not have very good ratings.
Right.
But yes, like, everyone who saw it, you know, everyone who saw it wanted to start their own, you know, sitcom or their own TV show.
Right.
Did he also do the Fox show that was like a college show?
Undeclared. Yes. And he went and did, it's mentions on the Wikipedia that he went and did that like right after they wrote this script. Like he went to focus on that. So even if they were about to make it, even if they had made it right then, he wasn't like really super involved with it after he wrote on it in like 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So he's
amassing this pretty stellar resume, but he's far from a household name.
Right.
But then once Anchorman blows up, it's kind of just a gravy train.
I remember reading about Adam McKay because I saw Anchorman and was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I remember reading about Judd Apatow's involvement on that movie. And I remember when 40-Year-Old Virgin came out, like reading some, I guess this was the intention of the piece, was sort of promotional, but it was like talking about him as a guy who had paid his dues for so long and a guy who had like finally had this kind of breakout hit being a producer on a big hit comedy. And now he was going to direct. And 40-Year-Old Virgin tees him up for Knocked Up, which Knocked Up is like a sensation, makes Seth Rogen a star, makes Katherine Heigl a star. It, you know, Paul Rudd greatly elevates his profile, you know, and that was like, and it was a sort of a new kind of like more shaggy, like, yeah, I mean, everyone knows what an Apatow movie is now, but
he'd
it's like,
the, like, I mean, it wasn't like the first time we had encountered this like crass with a heart kind of,
yeah,
a movie,
it's
but,
like,
but he had sort of perfected it in a way that felt very fresh.
Well, like anytime, like, you know, because you had like, I feel like you had the like the gross out comedies on the heels of like American Pie for a long time, and anytime those movies turned sentimental,
it felt a little disingenuous.
It was always disingenuous. It was always like you roll your eyes, like, okay, like I guess they need to include this, and the balance is a little bit more equal in an Apatow film where like he actually does care about his characters as people. And he wants them to be okay.
There's maybe I would say, like, Kevin Smith influence there, too, of, like, kind of
totally.
Like slackers, like, just basically, like, sitting around talking about pop culture and bullshit, but where Smith, at his best and his worst, his dialogue always feels very written.
Yeah.
Apatow kind of was sort of known for certainly writing, like being a fine writer, but also, you know, shepherding these fruitful improv sessions and... You know,
oh yeah,
and working with a good editor and
his, several good editors
and his, you know, and his and obviously like many sequences in his movies that feel very off the cuff.
There's a very fascinating New York Times interview with his editor, one of his editors on Trainwreck, where describing how they build a scene. It's fascinating because it is just like miles of footage that they're just like, and it's like they're using clips of like a million different takes, and it's like. So, yeah. So, anyways, so Judd Apatow...
He's a rock star at this point.
He blows up with Knocked Up, a film I loved and still loved this day. And we'll certainly talk more about Apatow in the next episode where we'll be... two episodes. I keep forgetting Bedtime Stories.
Bedtime Stories is next. We can kind of, like, breathe with Bedtime Stories, but we're going to need to, like... rent a space for 6 hours for Funny People.
Yeah, Funny People's a big deal, but we'll obviously talk a lot more about Judd Apatow and his relationship to Adam Sandler with that. But suffice to say that Judd Apatow was a big, big deal at this point, and it was enough for my snobby 19-year-old ass to think, well, if he is involved, if it's from the writer of Knocked Up, then it's probably better than this other crap. So I'll go. Went to see it with my dad. Remember thinking it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't see with the exception of Funny People, I did not see an Adam Sandler movie in theaters until Pixels, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So it was a long dry period after that. But had you guys seen this in a theater?
At this point, I was pretty much, and this includes Funny People, I'm sorry to say, I was just kind of... not making Sandler theatrical experiences a priority anymore. However, I did see Zohan just on DVD after the fact. I think my roommate at the time was like, oh, have you seen that? It's great. I was like, ah, I don't know. I'm kind of, Sandler's been bumming me out. Like, it's not the same anymore. He's like, right. Give this one a try. It's fun. And I sat down with him, watched it, and had a good old time. that was true then. It's true now when I rewatched it today. This is a fun movie. And I feel like, it's a Sandler movie for Sandler fans.
Right.
Because in general, I mean, like, this was a successful movie, right? But in general, it's not like, if I'm talking to random folks about doing a Sandler podcast, obviously the initial run of classics come up. Click is a favorite, but Zohan doesn't get mentioned too often. I feel like it's maybe kind of like, I don't know what its cultural impact has been, but it's not a heavy one. But Sandler fans, people who are into comedy and Sandler and Apatow, are like, oh yeah, Zohan, hell yeah. Like,
yeah.
People, like, there are dozens of us kind of a thing.
Yeah. Had you seen it in the theater, Austin?
I did. And it follows probably the same story as me seeing I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, where I probably... I don't remember the experience that well, but it was probably after work, getting off at a job late and going by myself. But I recall enjoying it a lot. Mm-hmm. Re-experiencing it here, it's, I think, almost better.
Yeah. So full disclosure, watching it again, this is like top five Sandler comedies for me. Like, I think this movie is hysterical, and I do think that, with no disrespect to any of his other comedies, I do think that the fact that they have this big conceit that sort of informs the way that all these jokes have to be constructed, I think that goes a long way towards, like, you're never far from, to me, like a pretty funny gag, like a sight gag, or like an off the cuff line. Like, there's just all these, it feels more well realized than something like even I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, which I liked more than I had remembered. That's more of a can get away with it. Like,
we are ostensibly in, like, Sandler has begun to spin his wheels territory, quote unquote. This one, it feels like his performance, his co-actors, Dennis Dugan's direction, it feels like everyone has, like, stepped up their game a little bit for this one. And there's a particular kind of energy in this movie that I find very winning that just isn't really there with other Dugan movies. And that includes, like, Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, to me, this whole movie felt the most, like, because I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry was a summer movie.
Yeah.
And this was a summer movie. And this felt like a summer comedy. Like, where it's just, like, super big, super over the top. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry is pretty subdued, pretty, like, small.
Yeah.
Like, no real, like, big gags in it.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is a intercut, like, you know, like a traveling the world, you know, kind of a movie. Like,
yeah,
it feels like an.
And as we were mentioning, talking about earlier off mic, I mean, it looks better than most Sandler comedies, Dugan comedies. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got, like, it actually, like, the times where it needs to look like an action movie, it actually does look like an action movie, as opposed to just, like, what, you know, what the perfunctory crap that you get a lot of times when it's action comedy and they feel like they don't need to, like, do anything for the action. We're back with Roger Ebert, because I think he didn't review Chuck and Larry because of, like, his illness. Like, he was like out of pocket at that time. But we do get a review of You Don't Mess with the Zohan. And so, wouldn't you know it, before we dive into the movie, Roger Ebert gave You Don't Mess with the Zohan 3 stars. And I would like to read the first and last paragraph of his review.
Please, the
first paragraph. The crowd I joined for You Don't Mess with the Zohan roared with laughter, and I understand why. Adam Sandler's new comedy is shameless in its eagerness to extract laughs from every possible breach of taste or decorum. And why am I even mentioning taste and decorum in this context? This is a mighty hymn of and to vulgarity, and either you enjoy it or you don't. I found myself enjoying it a surprising amount of the time, even though I was thoroughly ashamed of myself. There is a tiny part of me that still applauds the great minds who invented the whoopee cushion. And his last line, or his last paragraph. Sandler worked so hard at this, and so shamelessly, that he battered down my resistance. Like a Jerry Lewis out of control, he will do and does anything to get a laugh. No thinking adult should get within a mile of this film. I must not have been thinking. For my sins, I laughed. Sorry. I'll try to do better next time.
He's so confused by... he's found himself in the strange position of enjoying a Sandler movie. He has no idea how to process that.
He can't. Exactly. He has no idea what to do with that, and so he just sort of throws up his hands. But we'll make sense of it. So You Don't Mess with the Zohan is about Zohan. Is there a name beyond that? I think they call him by like a full name, but Zohan is like, let me see, because they're calling him something. You don't mess with the Zohan. No, they just say Zohan on IMDb. So, Anyways, he plays Zohan, and he is an Israeli counterterrorism operative, a secret agent, basically Israeli James Bond. We meet him on the beach, hanging out with some friends. He is really good at hacky sack. He catches it. He catches the hacky sack in his ass cheeks.
He catches a lot of things in his ass cheeks.
That's true. We see him playing tug of war on the beach with a hot babe on his shoulders. And first he's playing against three dudes and he pulls the rope single-handedly and wins. And then he pulls a bull. And when he pulls the bull into this pit, a fan, I guess, runs up and goes, "You don't mess with the Zohan." let's see. He's cooking fish, throwing those into his ass.
Making lots of hummus.
Doing all sorts of stuff. Using hummus for everything. And then a helicopter comes and picks him up because he has to go on an assignment. He goes into this briefing room and he learns that he is he's being tasked with stopping the Phantom, not Billy Zane's the Phantom, but the Phantom, who is a Palestinian operative played by John Turturro.
This movie could have used some Billy Zane, though.
It could have used some Billy Zane. God, I can't believe he hasn't been in a Sandler movie. But John Turturro is the Phantom. And I like that on the screen it says hates Israel. Yes. Zohan is already in the scene wearing a Mariah Carey shirt, which is, you'd think someone might ask him about it. Like, why do you like Mariah Carey so much? Like, I get why he's wearing them later in the movie because he's like more comfortable in his own skin. I should have looked this up before the podcast. Is Tribe hummus? Is that a brand of hummus?
I was never thinking that it was a real brand, but maybe it is.
Wrong white boys.
It says that it is, although the logo looks different, so maybe there's a different tribe. Anyways, I'm gonna include this on product placement watch. He dips a chocolate bar into some hummus in this scene.
The hummus is the best, like one of my favorite jokes of the whole movie.
Oh, yeah, the hummus is
just ongoing.
And the hummus
ends.
Was one of the only things that I remembered from the movie. Like when it was like, oh, we gotta watch Zohan. What do I remember about this movie? Well, I remember I remember that he eats a lot of hummus.
I think in 2008, at this time, I would have never tried hummus.
I think, weirdly enough, I think I'm the same way. Like, it's so crazy because it's so ubiquitous now. Everyone eats hummus, but it's like at the time, I think I too was like, what is hummus? Like,
yeah, I kind of wonder if it was like an incoming trend that like we just weren't privy of, because they make a joke in the boardroom where they're like, hummus, it's this like diarrhea like substance.
Right, yeah, it's this very tasty diarrhea like substance. So that is weird. Yeah, I had not remembered that, but you're right. Let's see. So he gets sent. He's getting ready to go on his mission to go kill the Phantom. We see as he's preparing, he has this Paul Mitchell book of hairstyles from like the 80s, and he's looking sort of longingly at it, and he's got these scissors that he's twirling on his finger, and it's like he's a master assassin, but he's got this secret dream, which is to be a hairstylist. It's a very weird specific joke.
Well, at one point he's asked like why. He's like, it's pleasant, it's peaceful, no one has to be killed when you're cutting hair.
But it's just like, and it's the kind of thing where it's like you just imagine like a late night writing session where it's like, I don't know, like how those two things get put together. Like, is a Mossad agent who really wants to cut hair, like,
well, I mean, I guess like he,
but is a sex machine,
right? Like, I mean, like they landed on cutting hair, and I guess like that is sort of like a cinematic thing, like someone cutting hair like is visually interesting,
right?
But it could have just as well been like, oh, what if he secretly wanted to be a librarian? What if he wanted to, I don't know, coach Little League or something?
Right, right.
Like, what's like the opposite of a kick-ass, sexy, deadly Mossad agent, and then from there, what's actually
right
comedically interesting. And then at some point, maybe someone pitched out the hairstylist, and it's like, oh, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I do feel like they uncovered a Paul Mitchell book somewhere. It's like, this would be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at all these crappy haircuts.
Like, what if Adam had this Avalon haircut? And then it was just like, oh, you know what? That gives me an idea. He goes and he has dinner with his parents, and his father is like talking about how, like, oh, because he didn't have, like, you don't have a war to fight in. It's like this ongoing battle, but, you know, I fought in a real war. And Adam Sandler's like, yeah, you that war lasted for 6 days. And he's like, 6 days and 5 hours. And then when he's just like, when will this conflict between us and the Palestinians end? And
his mom has that great line.
His mom is just like, it's been 2,000. They've been fighting for 2,000 years. It can't be much longer. It's a very good line. And he, he admits to them that his real dream is to cut and style hair. They make fun of him and they call him a fagula, I believe, which I understand what that means.
Yeah.
I understand what that's supposed to, but like, it comes up a few times in like a almost like a like. It's not like, oh, wouldn't that be awful if you were one? It's more just like a, like, it is just like a schoolyard, like, oh, like,
it's,
oh, you like that, huh?
Very, like tussly of the hair in its use. I'm not going to defend it.
No, certainly not. But like, it wouldn't be the joke that was made today if the movie were made.
Certainly. It definitely feels slightly jarring, you know, like 11 years after the fact. What year is this? Sorry.
Well, coming up on 12 years.
So, I mean, like, it feels a little jarring, but, I mean, not, I don't know. Like we were talking about this earlier off mic. Like, if you start, like, you can pull any number of yarns of, like, things that aren't culturally sensitive in this movie, but that yarn doesn't end. You sort of have to accept at the jump that there's a lot going on in this movie, like as to all that, and you know,
this isn't a large enough Band-Aid, certainly, but much like I now pronounce you Chicken Larry, this movie means very, very well.
Yes, it does.
it's very good-hearted.
Yeah. I can't imagine too. This offered like maybe a very remedial education for a whole swath, like a generation of Sandler fans of like Israeli Palestinian issues
who had not seen Munich,
which also
comes up in Knocked Up, the Judd Apatow film, but they had not seen Munich and they had to learn it, which is where I learned about the Israeli Palestinian conflict. Zohan is crying in his bed, and that's where he's just like, I just want to make people silky smooth.
Which silky smooth,
very funny,
is like could have been the tagline for this movie. And
it's
makes a meal,
making the world silky smooth.
Silky smooth.
And next scene we cut to, he's like storming this compound where the Phantom is, and he's doing all sorts of crazy parkour moves, like leaping around, taking out henchmen. He takes this guy's gun apart and then like catches all the bullets like in his nose and his like mouth or whatever. And the funny thing about that scene is that the guy, they're having an argument such as you might have in like a bar or something about like, or like on C where it, like, it's just like, oh, like this is our land, like as like in between like fighting moves they're doing, and he's like, oh yeah, my ancestors were never here, and he throws the guy off a balcony, and as the guy's plummeting, he's like, it's not so cut and dry, it's not so cut and dried as you think. It's like, oh wow, they're actually committing to this bit about making it about Israel and Palestine. He runs into this room where John Turturro is standing on the ceiling. I get that, like, it's supposed to be that they have crazy secret agent powers, but it's just so funny to see him like fucking like a Dracula movie or something. he's standing on the ceiling, and he turns around and he runs and leaps out a window like from the ceiling. Zohan follows him. John Turturro, the Phantom, lets a dog loose, and Zohan like steps on the dog's head to like jump out the window. Turturro shoots a rocket at Zohan, and it accidentally he dodges it, and it accidentally destroys like a store, and the guy's just like, my store, and Zohan hands him a little card that's like government reparation for free like explosion damage. The kids throw rocks at him, and he makes the rock balloon animal and throws it back to them.
He can do no wrong, Zohan.
And then Turturro gets on a jet ski and takes off And Zohan pursues him into the ocean. By like, this was another thing I remember just because it was such a big part of the trailers, swimming after him like a dolphin, like where he's right. just like leaping into the air and like coming back down these like graceful arcs.
It is like a superhero movie.
Like, yes.
Like, this is the Sandler superhero movie.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like that or like a ridiculous parody of like a James Bond like sequence. And then they, you know, one of them throws a grenade at the other and they're like playing like tennis with the grenade. They're like hitting it back and forth. And then it flies up into the middle, and when the explodes, and when the smoke clears, Zohan is nowhere to be seen, and Phantom is like, "I got him, ha ha ha," you know, he's dead.
Right.
And it turns out Zohan is not dead.
What?
He's underwater, and he's planned to fake his own death, and he's gonna go to America and become a hairdresser. There's a friendly pelican who's holding his bags in the middle of the ocean. And he ends up in a cargo area of a plane to America with these two dogs.
He makes friends with the puppy dogs.
Yeah,
nice.
Scrappy and Coco.
And makes them silky smooth.
He's explaining his plan to Scrappy and Coco. There's also a part in this where he's cutting his own hair, mm-hmm. and he has a can of shaving cream. And it's very clearly, if you're a man who's ever bought shaving cream before, it's very clearly Barbasol, but it's turned away from the camera. And I was like, now wait just a fucking minute. You mean they didn't get the product placement for this? Like that? I feel like someone dropped the ball here. That's not the Adam Sandler, Dennis Dugan that I know.
They pulled a punch on that one.
And he cuts his hair into the cut that he wears for the rest of the movie. It's on the poster, and he explains to the dogs, "It's the Avalon. It says I care about the way I look, but I'm still approachable."
I guess it is sort of a trope of so many movies. Like he likes either a single joke or like a series of jokes that are basically his character being out of step, like culturally, like out of time.
Right.
I'm thinking of like Billy Madison on his first day of high school driving up, and he's still like thinks like, oh well, I was a king in high school, but yeah, like oh, maybe you were in 1988 or whenever it was, and he drives up with that car and then that jacket, and people are just laughing his ass off. He shows up in New York with this particular haircut. He's like, yeah, disco, and everyone's like, well, who the what?
Dare I say the movie is almost subtle about this running joke. I don't want to claim something that's not there for the movie, like make a critical claim, because I think the movie's really good on its own merits. But that, the fact, like I always think of the joke from like Eurotrip, which I think is a very funny bit, but like where they're in the foreign country and like $5 like buys them a hotel, like it's like, oh, the currency is so devalued or whatever, and like they're making a joke about how Miami Vice has just made it to this country and all that stuff, and like. The notion of like this particular thing where it's like they've only gotten this 80s hairdresser book or whatever. It's like that's never really made explicit that it's like, oh, like it's like you don't like they're behind on the times culturally or whatever. But like, I don't know, that plus the disco stuff is like kind of like without anyone saying like, oh, gosh, you like they just got disco over there or like, oh, like you never seen a different haircut. It's like, I don't know, that movie. They sort of just like let that one lie.
I guess Mariah Carey is the most modern thing that they have.
Right. That's true.
Which is like 96. Mm-hmm. Huh. Still a good 12 years.
Yeah. So he makes it to New York. He gets picked up by, so technically not the first, because John Turturro is very much in the Sandler squad. We get a cameo from Chris Rock, Sandler squad member. And Chris Rock is playing a Jamaican taxi driver. And he has, that was my Apple Watch, trying to get in on the action. Chris Rock explains like, oh, like, you know, what are you doing in America? And he's just like, my dream is to cut hair. And he's like, oh, I had a dream to like bring all my brothers and sisters over here and live like a happy life. And he's like, oh, well, did your dream come true? And he's just like, no, me brothers and sisters were hacked to death. But I love the Chinese food here. And it's like, all right, we never see that character again. It's just kind of a random bit of whatever.
That's a good Chris Rock bit.
Yeah. He goes to the Paul Mitchell building to become a hairdresser. He wants to meet Paul Mitchell. and he doesn't really understand that that's not how it works. And then they all laugh at him because he's like a, you know, a weird, goofy looking man with an 80s haircut. And he does, he like sort of impromptu disco dances in there. So they all laugh at him. And then he walks outside and he stumbles upon this accident, this car accident, involving a biker played by another Sandler Squad member, Nick Swardson. Mm-hmm. Nick Swardson, not yet incredibly obnoxious.
I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is like the first time he's playing like a major character up until this point. It's been like little side roles.
Yes, yeah. this is the most this is the most, and I guess he had, you know, he had done. I guess he'd really broken out, like, for anyone who went to see it, with Grandma's Boy. Like, he's, you know, a major part of that. So you see him in these smaller roles in these other Sandler movies.
He's funny in Grandma's Boy.
Yes.
I like him in that. I like him in this. He's playing kind of, you know, like this.
I mean, he's a straight man in this, but mm-hmm. he's he's funny.
Yeah. He's definitely, I mean, I guess he was kind of a, like, Benchwarmers, he was a lead. Not that that was a Sandler film, but he was kind of.
I've never
like,
actually seen Benchwarmers.
It was
Happy believe
Madison,
it or not.
Though, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I should watch it. I've seen Bucky Larson. I should watch Benchwarmers.
But yeah, he went from the Bed Bath & Beyond guy in Click, which was very minor.
Yeah, like a few lines.
Kevin McDonough, the brother of Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
Which was like.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah. So, yeah. And here he's like in like a significant. He's like in a third of the movie or something.
I didn't remember the movie, and I really was thinking that he was going to be in like. A majority of it, like
right.
Be his best friend and like really befriend him.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Nick Swardson as a cyclist has been involved in an accident, and this businessman who was in one of the cars is screaming at him. And Zohan comes up, and the guy calls him like I don't know. He calls him just like a stereotypical Middle Eastern name.
Like Mufasta?
Mustafa, maybe.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, whatever, Mustafa. And he's like, Mustafa, this is not my name. Mm. And the guy is like, you know, go back to your country. And Adam Sandler, Zohan, turns him into a pretzel.
Yeah.
Because the guy was like, go back to your pretzel stand.
That's right.
And so Sandler, having this idea incepted into his brain, decides to tie the man into a literal human pretzel. Let's see. Soon after that, we get we get our first glimpse of. Rob Schneider drives by. Sandler Squad member Rob Schneider drives by. Now he's playing a Palestinian in this movie, which, compared to his last appearance in an Adam Sandler movie, it doesn't really matter that he's not It matters a lot less that he's not Palestinian because this is like beautifully sensitive and nuanced compared to his, you know, sub Mickey Rooney shit in Chuck and Larry.
That's a nadir right there.
Sandler sees him drive by and like holds Nick Swardson in front of him to like shield himself from view. He's like, he clearly recognizes the guy. Then they go to Nick Swardson's house, apartment rather, and his mother is played by the great Lanny Kazan. Mm. Lanny Kazan, probably best known to most people as the mother in My Big Fat Greek Wedding,
right.
And its sequel, which I never saw. Mm.
She's funny in this thing.
She is funny in this. And they are eating. They're eating dinner, and she is asking him where he's from, because he has claimed that he's from Australia, or as he pronounces it, Australia.
Australia.
And she's like, well, you don't sound Australian. And he's just like, oh, I am half Australian, half Mount Everest. So this is what you're hearing, which another joke that made me laugh a lot. And then Swanson like walks in to ask his mom a question, and suddenly Zohan and Lady Kazan are just going at it. They're just like
very casually and comfortably. Oh yes, I do your mom.
Yeah, he wanted to thank her for the matzo ball soup. he comes around to talk to Nick Swardson about it.
I haven't made sticky in 2 days. What do you want from me?
Where he's just like, oh, don't worry, it's a perfectly natural, normal thing. Like, he's like peeing in the litter box because he's saying this.
At one point, he pees on the cat, and there's this one line delivery of Swardson, who again is kind of playing just like this, like milquetoast sort of like soft guy, and the way he says patches whenever Zohan's just pissing all over the cat, it never fails to make me laugh.
Also in this scene, you see Lanny Kazan's ass, And I thought that was notable because you also see her ass in Gigli, or colloquially pronounced Giggly, starring Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez.
Like Gobble Gobble?
Gobble Gobble. Yeah, she plays Ben Affleck's mother in that film. Oh, and at one point he has to give her her insulin shot, I guess, in her ass. Mm. And you just like, I vividly remember that. I'll never... never be able to forget that. Yeah, and sure. Watching You Don't Mess with the Zohan, I was it brought me back. Let's just say,
if there's a commentary available on the Zohan DVD, and I hope there is, I need to watch it because you see a lot of Zohan ass in this movie. I don't know if that's Sandler's or not.
That's a good question.
If it is, good for you, Sandman. That's nice tushy.
He's got a pretty good looking body this entire movie.
He did. I mean, like, it's not like it's not like he had like Marvel training or whatever. Like,
right. This isn't Kumail Nanjiani.
Like, God, Christ, that's scary. But he does look, you know, in Sandler standards, he looks pretty sharp in this thing. I wonder if there was, I'm sure there was like a, you know, like, oh, hey, like a year pre-shooting Zohan, you know, just play more basketball at him. Like, I wonder how exactly that worked out.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely would have had to have been some trainer. Because, I mean, I guess looking back, I don't know how many times we ever see him, like, shirtless in a movie. Mm. But he was just in really good shape, especially for a guy that always talks about, like, if you, like, watch his talk show specials, he'll just be like, yeah, you know, I'm out of weight. Or I'm overweight, sorry.
I mean, he also, like, I mean, like, Sandler's also, like, second to none. He's second only to Kevin Smith as far as wearing, let's call it unflattering, like, sizes of clothing.
Right.
Where he's wearing like gigantic basketball shorts and a hockey jersey or something. And it's like just these big, big baggy things. And so yeah, when you see him like here, it's just like, and part of it is obviously he needs to look this way for the jokes to land.
Sure.
But yes, no, it is he is looking pretty good here. So after this, they go to a club, and so Han goes up to the DJ and asks him to put on Rockwell, and there's a really funny cut here where the guy is just, the DJ is like, I'm not gonna play that corny shit, and then you cut. Hard cut on that.
To Zohan
dancing at the guy. You know what's happened.
Boop, boop, boop. And he's dancing, and he's being the DJ, and everyone in the club's having a good old time. Then after that, it cuts to the DJ on the ground.
In a pretzel.
Who has been pretzeled. I feel like you don't even need that cutaway to him being a pretzel. You just need just a hard cut to him. Like, oh, he's a DJ now, and yeah, he probably kicked that guy's ass.
Yeah, that's just like, it is like, I don't know, like, I don't mean to damn with faint praise here, but it is just like, that joke is so much funnier when you cut that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Rather than just being like, oh, he beat someone else up. Like, okay, like, that's mildly funny, but we've seen that joke already.
When people talk about lazy Dennis Dugan and lazy Adam Sandler movies, this movie is not on that list.
Right. Right,
does not belong in that list. We can start having arguments about Grown Ups and Just Go With It and so on, but this movie is sharp.
Right.
And feels sharp in a way that we don't often associate with Dugan. Like, again, I feel like everyone stepped up on this one, and the results are a lot fun.
Yeah. Swartzen gets kicked out for a reason that I didn't really catch.
I love that he's wearing like a black turtleneck and like drinking milk at the bar too.
Yeah,
and just
I liked that.
Like, and they don't like over lean into his like creepiness or whatever. Like, this isn't Alan Covert and Little Nicky or whatever.
Right.
It was like they had like 12 different ideas for that character and they just stuffed into one. Like, basically he's just like Swartzen is playing like a nice guy. He is not a virgin. He's had sex before, but it was awkward, and he's just super awkward around people, and he's at a bar, at a disco, and drinking milk at the bar and just kind of like, hi, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's sweet.
And then he runs into he ends up encountering Zohan in this club, ends up encountering a fellow Israeli man named Uri. And Uri immediately recognizes him as Zohan, and Zohan is like, you know, keep it to yourself. I'm here. I want to be a hairdresser. Is that same job where he's like, you're a fagala or whatever?
Oh, right.
then next scene is Zohan going to look for work. He goes to an African American hair salon. And the woman, the proprietor, is just like, well, have you ever cut a sister's hair before? And he's just like, sure, sister, brother, grandma, grandpa, I cut them all. Like, yeah. And they're like, well, have you done dreads? And he attacks the dreads like it's like some sort of creature. Look, I laughed. That's all we need to say about that.
Like you... If you laugh at one thing in this movie, you sort of have to open yourself up to everything else. If you have a big problem with one thing in this movie, you're like the whole thing.
You're gonna get stuck real fast.
Yeah, yeah. You like I feel like this movie is such a cartoon in all directions and all targets that again, like kind of pulling at that yarn is just gonna be sort of a fool's errand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So then he goes to a kid's hair salon, which I guess there are places for just kids getting haircuts.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But one kid is crying.
He's like, hey, young man, you need to be careful.
He's like, oh, she might slice your jugular on accident. I've seen this. I've done this. You don't want this.
You cannot stitch the jugular. You'll bleed out in 4 minutes. And the kid just weeping, screaming and weeping.
He screams and weeps some more, and Sandler then gives him like a Vulcan nerve pinch and knocks his ass out. All the other kids start screaming, and then Sandler, like the button on the scene, is like leaning over and being like, when I was your age, I'd already killed 7 men. Maybe you should grow up.
I'm so sorry if I'm wrong, but the star of the scene is like the head stylist there who's sort of like giving him a tour.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Jackie Sandler?
I don't think it was. I didn't notice her in this one.
I did read that she was here with a kid in the somewhere. She's like leading a kid along.
Oh, okay. Maybe she's like in the background in there, right. Or maybe she's like, because like Dennis Dugan is also in the movie, but I didn't clock him, even though I've been able to spot him in the past.
Oh, sure.
So Jackie Sandler is. Hold on, I saw it right here. At 1 hour 40 minutes, so definitely not going
to
be
right because that's like close to the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's at the end of the film.
My mistake.
There's a goat ride happening.
Oh, okay. Oh. So she'll be like, oh, okay. So that makes sense.
Well, I wonder if the little kid on the goat then is one of little,
yeah,
Sadie Sandler.
Well, Sadie Sandler. Yeah.
So then after that, he goes to visit his new friend Uri at the Israeli electronics store going out of business. We should say that there are certain jokes here, and we're not going to like harp on it too much. There are certain jokes here that like, and this is part of why I find the movie so funny. They seem to be speaking to something extremely specific about like a cultural difference. Having never lived in a place with an extensive Israeli or Palestinian population, like I've never lived in New York City, I don't know what these are referring to, but they have the shape of jokes that like, it's almost like the way that I use before I moved to Texas, when I'd watch King of the Hill and thought one way about it. And then when I actually like knew what Texas was like, I was like, oh, all of this makes so much more sense to me now. But this going out of the Israeli electronics store seems to be a very specific thing they're making fun of. Yeah.
Well, and the fact that anytime he tells like an Israeli person, either like a family member or a friend that he wants to go into hair, they're like, oh, why not go into stereo equipment?
Mm-hmm. Sony Guts. They keep saying Sony Guts, which apparently part of this script was based on some Saturday Night Live stuff they wrote,
so,
like Sabra.
Yeah, so it was a skit that they did twice in like the early to mid-90s, both starring Tom Hanks as like this increasingly exasperated Israeli TV salesman guy who's just like trying to like just pawn off like lousy crap. And you can look these up. We found them today on like, one was on Daily Motion, the other one was on Meta Cafe, so like it's not like they're on YouTube, but it's Tom Hanks and it's like sort of them doing these kind of like super specific like Israeli stereotypes basically, which it's
Sabra Shopping Network and Sabra Price is Right.
Yeah, so I think the Shopping Network one, you see, like, it's mostly Hanks, and then you see appearances from Dana Carvey and Sandler. And we're talking, like, going overboard babyface,
right.
Sandler. Like, and then in the second one, you see more familiar faces from that era of SNL. And they're fun. They're interesting little time capsules. And you can sort of see, like, squint and see germ of ideas that maybe Sandler was banging out with, like, with not Apatow, but the third collaborator.
Smigel.
Smigel, thank you.
Yeah.
that eventually took to the form of this. So this is clearly like something that they've wanted to do for a long time.
Well, specifically the Sony gut, like it says online that the thing they keep saying Sony guts, like the idea that like there's like Sony hardware inside of this thing, even though it has a different shell.
Sony guts, and I think the origins of like disco.
Yeah, well the like whenever he's dancing disco, like the song that plays, there's this refrain going in the background like disco, good, disco, disco, good. And I just thought that was part of the song, but apparently that's a joke.
Yeah.
Hanks
couldn't do a cameo in Zohan.
He's in, so he goes into going out of business, the electronics store, and you meet Robert Smigel, the writer of those,
yes.
The co-writer of this movie and the writer of those, skits on SNL. He's a Sandler Squad member, later directed a Sandler film, mm-hmm. The week of, and he, he's trying to convince someone to like buy a stereo for a certain amount. Like it's a pretty funny bit, and he talks about Sony guts. I noticed in this scene, it's actually quite strange how little product placement ultimately is in this movie.
It's less than you'd think.
There is a Dunkin' Donuts cup here, that coffee cup that is turned to the camera in such a way that I was like, that's got to be intentional. And then when Zohan asks for a job, and Uri is like, no. Once you start in the electronics store, you never get out. You see him and points to one guy. He's like, he wanted to be the next Bill Cosby. Hasn't aged very well, but he's like, he wanted to be the next Bill Cosby. He wanted to be race car driver. An electronics store is a dream killer. I won't let the Zohan lose his dream. They watch this commercial where Phantom, back in Palestine, having killed quote unquote Zohan, has really milked it. I guess in the 3 days he's been gone, he's really milked it by opening a series of Mukintukin. I can't say it. Mukintukin restaurants, where there's action figures of there's these like Happy Meal figures, and God, what I wouldn't give to get my hands on one of these. But action figures of the Phantom, Phantom and Zohan, and they say in the commercial, it's like a fast food commercial, and it's like, oh, action figures from the movie Phantom presents Death to Zohan, and the disclaimer at the bottom of the commercial says, limit one per customer. America is Satan.
That's great. That's the thing too. This movie has pretty high rewatchability factor, because they pack in every gag and line.
Oh yeah,
that you can think of, like, it's dense in that way. It's fun.
So he goes across the street to the Palestinian side of the street, because apparently this street that the going out of business electronics store is on is, and that's the name of the store, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think I fully conveyed that. There's an Israeli side and a Palestinian side to this block. And Zohan walks across the street to Rafaela's, I think is what it's called. It's a hairdresser. It's a salon on the Palestinian side of the street that is run by Emmanuel Chikri. I believe I'm saying that right. Playing Dahlia. Emmanuel Chikri, most well known probably now for being on Entourage.
Entourage.
And I knew her at this point, even though I never watched this movie. I knew her when this movie came out by, she was in the NSYNC film On the Line.
Oh, that classic.
Yes, so she is the love interest in that film, the one that she's Lance Bass's beard, I guess.
God.
Like, chasing after him.
Well.
So
she's been in the trenches.
She's been in the trenches, but... he is trying to convince her that he can cut hair there. He is demonstrating this by doing one-handed and then no-handed push-ups. And then at one point he's doing push-ups with his tongue. She finally is just like, all right, forget it. You can sweep up hair. And he's like, soon the whole world will be silky smooth. We see him brushing his teeth with hummus, getting ready to go into work. We see him reading a book as he's cutting Lainey Kazan's hair. He's naked, mm-hmm. while he's cutting her hair, and she's reading a book called Small Talk Guide for Hairdressers. And he says to her in the beginning of the scene, "Did you see the new Kate Hudson movie? I think she's even more vivacious than her mother." So he's like, he's in the store cutting hair, or like, sweeping up hair, blah, blah, blah. And there's this, I think there's another I can't remember his name. Is it Claude? There's another hairdresser, a male hairdresser, who let me see if they mention his. I think it's not Claude. I'm not seeing that. Yeah, it is Claude. Okay. So this other employee named Claude who basically, let's see, what are my notes here? Apologies. Oh yeah. So Claude teaches him how to cut hair. It's like a little montage where he's showing him like the right way to do it. There's a funny bit where he like slaps his hand because Zohan's getting something wrong, and Zohan like puts him in a pretzel. Again, they keep going back to this well. It's very funny. Zohan gets a job as a limo driver, for one scene, so that he can drive Sandler Squad returning member Henry Winkler.
Coach Klein.
Coach Klein. He drives like a maniac, drives up on two wheels. Winkler vomits everywhere when he steps out of the car. And then back in the salon, Zohan tells one of the elderly women there to get her hair cut that she looks very bangable today.
He sleeps with so many middle-aged and elderly.
Well,
ladies.
So that's what's coming. He seems to... And again, the way this is introduced is pretty, like, it kind of just, like, casually slips in. It's like, we see him, you know, he has sex with Lainey Kazan.
Right.
And it's just, like, a perfectly normal, natural thing. It almost seems like...
He's into it, she's into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, of course, why wouldn't I have sex with this beautiful older woman? Mm. And he's so... He's not doing it for cynical, like, oh, I can get more business to the store by having sex with these ladies. He's clearly, like...
He's providing a
wants
service.
Wants to do this. And is like, so he, He you know, so he's clearly doing that already. And then they learn that a hairdresser has quit because there's like a neighborhood developer who wants to like, you know, build a shopping mall in place of all the stores there. And she's like, oh, the writing's on the wall. I need to quit. So Zohan gets the go ahead to cut a woman's hair. He calls her sexy as he's washing her hair. He says, you've got the ass and tits of a schoolgirl. He takes her earring off with his tongue and spits it at the stereo and turns on some music. He just goes all out. He's just like, he's licking her hair. There's cutaways to her dog watching all this. There's lots of dog reaction shots.
Never not funny.
So he gives her this haircut and then takes her in the back and has sex with her. And then we cut to, because there's these women in the store watching this happen. And then I guess word travels fast because all of a sudden all these women like lining up around the block to come in and get the full Zohan treatment. he's like putting hummus in their hair. He's giving them, oh, I didn't even mention, he gives the name Scrappy Coco like the dog. So everyone is referring to him as Scrappy. Only Uri knows that he's Zohan.
Right. That's his moniker.
And he has the Coco look, and it's like the talk of the town. Paul Mitchell calls him and is like, please come work for me. And Zohan is like, I'm sorry, I can't. My loyalty is to... He says it like as he's hanging up the phone, and I found it very funny. My loyalty is to here, I will destroy you.
So that guy... So Paul Mitchell, actually, he died in the 80s, and that guy's Jean-Paul DeJoria.
Oh, okay.
Who's like the Patron owner.
Right!
Patron Tequila, and also...
Doesn't he live
here?
Yeah.
I think?
I've seen him at parties.
Yeah, he's...
Wow.
He just... He's a very philanthropic dude, and that's all I'll say.
So he's playing.
I thought he was playing.
But is he involved with Paul Mitchell?
It's like Jean-Paul DeJoria, Paul
Mitchell. Oh, had no idea.
Like a combo guy.
Okay,
yeah.
Fuck. Well, I feel like an idiot now because I've called him Paul Mitchell just there.
No, I only know him because we showed a whale movie last year.
Uh-huh.
And just working through a nonprofit, you see him a lot.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
I was kind of waiting, like, is he going to show up in this?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's and there
wild.
He is.
That's crazy. I saw his name in the credits and didn't bother to look up who it was, who he'd played. Scrappy shows Claude, like, the proper way to seduce ladies, which is by putting their crotches next to her face. It seems pretty clear that Claude is gay, and Claude is kind of trying to tell Zohan that, like, no, I don't, like, I really would rather not do this. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a bit where Nick Swardson, he says something about his bicycle, and then Zohan just kind of, like, gives him, like, a friendly pat on the shoulder. He's like, oh, no, thank you. I'm just into the girls. But thank you, though.
Oh, no, he says, are you bionic or something? And he goes, oh, no, I just like the ladies, but thanks.
But thank you.
Yeah. And there's a moment, too, with Claude where he's like, let me teach you how to give sexy haircut. And he's like, get over here.
Right, yeah.
Put yourself on them. And then, yeah.
Well, he also showed in this scene, he shows Claude, he's like, I have the biggest one. And Claude's like, really? And he's just like, yeah, look. And he pulls up in his pants and Claude is like, it's not, he's like, honestly, it's not that big. And Zohan's like, no, the bush. It's the biggest bush in the world. And he's like, oh, see, it's like, it's padding. The girls like that.
There's a lot of bush talk in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah. This whole movie's been, and that's not even talking about George Bush.
Right. Yeah, that comes later.
We're coming to that. But there's this whole like joke in this movie where he's got like apparently a big dick that turns into actually just, I guess this whole time, just a big bush.
Yeah, it seems more like the joke's about the bush.
Yeah.
But he, this is the scene where Schneider like looks in and sees Zohan, like so recognizes like, oh my God, Zohan is here. And there's a flashback to Schneider threw as a man in the desert. When Zohan came to his village, Schneider threw a shoe at Zohan, and then when Zohan tried to leave, tried to reason with them, Schneider spit in his face, and so Zohan like beat him up and took his prized goat, his best greatest possession in the world was this goat, and Zohan walks off with it, and Schneider vows revenge. He meets up with he calls these two other Palestinian men, two actors who I found very funny in this, like their performances, the way that they react to certain things just cracked me up, like very good bit players.
Yeah.
They talk about like they talk about wanting to get revenge on Zohan, all that stuff. And then we have Zohan, he goes to Central Park with what is her name? Emmanuel Shikri. I already forgot her character's name. Dahlia. They go with Dahlia through Central Park, and they're just sort of having this little like cute dialogue stuff where he mentions like, or she mentions like, oh, like I played softball when I first came to America. It's nice to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it, like the movie occasionally, without being too heavy-handed about it, like it is like actually earnestly about like assimilation and like American culture, like the idea of I don't mean to sound like heady or like pretentious, but it's like the idea of America as a melting pot.
Yeah.
And the way that works itself out practically when you have something as contentious as Israel versus Palestine. And I don't want to make a claim for this movie as like as the most sensitive treatment of these issues, but it does have this on its mind.
Mm-hmm. This feels like the Adam Sandler version of Little America, that new Apple TV show.
Yeah.
That's like basically just immigrants coming to America and like learning an experience, like kind of like trying to like one episode of it is like a girl who is undocumented but becomes really good at racquetball. And
okay.
Like that's becomes her single thing that she's great at. I mean, I'm sure she's great at more, but that's like her thing that where she excels. And this is like the Adam Sandler offensive version of this.
Yeah, and you know, in the context of offensive Adam Sandler things, I'd say this one definitely leans on the thoughtful, sweet side.
Yeah,
yeah, it's definitely. I mean, yeah, I definitely came away from it from that. I don't like, you know, with I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. There was like the whole we were able to find that like GLAAD like kind of gave their stamp of approval. I wasn't quite able to find anything that seemed to be like this is. I don't know what body would say, like, this is our stamp of approval.
Well, there's just, like, no... I mean, like, what, aside from Munich, what Hollywood movie even brings this issue up? So it's, like, I almost feel like... What I read about it was that, like, you know, it was harder to get Arabic actors than, like, the Israeli actors, like, because of the slant of the project, like, the perceived slant of it, I guess. But it's, you know, I think that otherwise it's not even, like... It's not something that anyone is going to, like, issue a statement on, really.
Yeah.
And they talk about how there are, you know, hardcores on both sides and like over in America, like that stuff doesn't, you know, once you get away from it, like you realize that it doesn't matter so much and the fighting needs to end. She gives him I have not mentioned this yet, which is crazy because it's such a big part of the movie. She gives him a fizzy bubla, which is a drink with a very cool sort of like, What would you like? What's the shape of that glass? Like bubble, like it, like bubble glass, it, like almost like
kind of looks like a morphed lava lamp.
Yeah, it looks like a lava lamp type like thing where it gets like it's like fat on top and at bottom and skinny in the middle.
I so wish it were a real drink.
Yeah, and this so this is the craziest thing was that I was like all ready to like you know taking notes while watching this and I was like you put some Israeli product I've never heard of. Of course, Zohan's gonna have Israeli product placement. Nope, it is a thing they invented for the movie, which is crazy. So the Palestinians led by Schneider, they send in a guy to flush Zohan out of his hiding place, out of his alibi, his alias, by sending in this guy to talk about like a you know about a goat taking soup. And the guy goes in and is utterly enchanted by Zohan and comes out and he's like, he was really cool. He said, I have a nice face. Like he said, I have good curls that frame a kind face. Zohan subsequently learns that he cannot get it up for, one of his elderly patrons because he is in love with Dahlia.
Listen to your meat. It speaks to you. This is the one true love.
That's right.
Something like that.
He goes to the doctor and he goes, doctor, I need help. And he pulls his pants down and the doctor just looks down and goes, well, that's actually he goes, wow, well, that's actually not a problem for a doctor. You can just shave it. And he's like, no. Like
the bush days.
Yeah. Zohan is talking about this with Nick Swartzen and Lainey Kazan about how like, oh, he's realizing that he loves Dahlia and that's why he can't get it up for anyone else. As they're having this conversation, they're playing hacky sack with a cat.
This is...
And the cat is alive and screaming or yowling.
This is poor Patches, who you know earlier already got peed on by Zohan. I haven't seen this movie in a while. I remembered the larger beats and like kind of like the larger set pieces. I had forgotten all about Kitty Hacky Sack. And it laid me out rewatching it earlier today. And it's just like, the CGI is like... good enough for to where it's not distracting, but it's kind of like lame enough to where like it's sort of like it's very obvious like animatedness kind of makes it funny too. It's like the perfect amount of realistic and fake. It's hitting this really sweet spot right in the middle, and just the little kitty sound effects. I'm always a sucker for it. It's why I love the whole sequence in Mr. Deeds when they're tossing those kitties out of the burning house, like just. Like fake cats flying like through the screen and cat sound effects like coming like through the thing like that is never not going to just leave me in stitches and just the 30 seconds you see of them just beating this cat around.
It's so funny. Ebert was mad about it. So Schneider and pals call the Hezbollah customer service hotline. It's a very funny joke. They're eating baked Lay's product placement watch. Again, it was kind of slim pickings here, but they go to a pharmacy to get bomb-making supplies, and they end up getting... They're asking for liquid nitrogen, but the way they're saying it to this elderly shop owner, he gives them Neosporin, which is also a product placement watch. And
that makes sense why that joke didn't land with me, because I had the captions on, and the captions just said, liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, and he's like, I want liquid nitrogen, and they're just like, oh, like, okay. Like, it makes it, you could almost understand how he might hear Neosporin. In my notes here, I wrote something about how suddenly there's this land developer plot. So, like, I don't remember the scene exactly, but, like, it's like all of a sudden, you know, Michael Buffer, the Let's Get Ready to Rumble announcer, is playing a land developer. If you've ever seen a movie, you know what he wants to do, which is he wants to build a big fancy mall on top of all these neighborhood shops, and he'll stop at nothing to do that. That's really all you need to know about him.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of starts out with like a henchman that goes into the going out of business and other stores, and he'll be like, no, I want you to, I need to close you down. Like, we need to raise your rent $20,000.
Yeah. He seems to, but he's not really pushy about it. He's just kind
of like, it's like that guy's, they're able to like just work around him for him to be like, I guess I walked out of here buying a like electronics set.
Yeah, exactly. Sony guts. So Zohan tells Dahlia, he says, I can only be Steve with you. And she's like, who's Steve? And he's like, Steve with an I. Like, he can only get stiff with his true love. The Palestinians throw what they think is their bomb onto the window. It does nothing. Obviously, it's just a bunch of goop.
she tastes the
Lady
mother
Kazan
of
tastes it. Yeah, she's like, oh, that's Neosporin. It. I put this on. I put this on like. She says something about like she's
genital
like,
sores.
I put this on genital sores and more product placement. Watch as Nick Swardson drinks straight from a bottle of Maalox. This is when Zohan has like a spray bottle of hummus and like sprays it at the cat. His poor cat.
Patches.
He goes out on Zohan goes out on community night watch. I'm realizing how like sort of like shambolic this movie is, where it's like a bunch of bits, but he's out on the community watch with Kevin Nealon, Sandler Squad member.
Which Kevin Nealon here, the like reminds me, his name's just Kevin, so I don't know who he's playing, if anybody. But he reminds me so much of Kevin Nealon from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, he does seem like he could be the same person.
Like the way he's talking is just kind of like, you know, we're gonna see them do a crime, and what are we gonna do? Where are we gonna like? He just like, talks exactly like the Happy Gilmore.
He's very non-confrontational. Very like, oh, like no, let's just let it be. Yeah, he sees these people spray painting a store, one of the stores, and Zohan beats the shit out of them in fast motion. I did write down after this, Michael Buffer as land developer, Trump question mark. Let's not think about it too much. So I say we not think about it too much. Let's see. They're talking about he has a meeting with his henchmen about like, what, like all these people, like, why can't we get rid of that damn hairdresser? I also noticed in this scene that not only does Wallbridge is the developer's name. Not only does Wallbridge have a model of the mall with a roller coaster on top that he wants to build, but he also has a scale model of his girlfriend where he's talking about the proportions of her breasts to her ass. But like just the fact that he walks over and there's just a model to scale model of his girlfriend. It's like, okay.
Sandler Squad guy in that room. You got, is it John Farley?
Is that right?
There's one of the Farley guy, the Farley brother.
Kevin Farley?
Is it Kevin Farley? John Farley.
John Farley.
And that's Kevin. It's Chris Farley's brother?
Yeah, he's in like Little Nicky and he's in other things. You recognize him by the face, I'm sure.
Right. Oh.
Because he said something that he makes a really funny joke that I am blanking on, but I just like love his delivery.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh yeah, so the Israelis and the Palestinians on that block get into a spat about who spray painted the store, and then they end up talking about things that actually bring them together, which is they talk about how they would like to do Laura Bush and Hillary Clinton. The one guy is just like, oh, she would boss me around, like that's
someone
great big
like,
legs
like oh Michelle she has great legs.
Yeah. It says I'll take Obama's wife, she has legs, and the one person is like one person's like I like Chelsea, and another person's like you're crazy, and it's like no she's very very like good looking. Then someone says wife of McCain, I take wife of McCain, she has the ass, and you know she's not getting any.
At one point there's a cutaway. Is it Zohan and the Phantom? Where it's like one of them is like, ah, this is what happens whenever they discuss politics,
right? So Michael Buffer calls Dave Matthews,
yes,
Sandler Squad member who appeared in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, and Dave Matthews is playing a racist redneck who I guess he like goes to events like pride parades or anything diversity related and tries to sabotage them. He's a white supremacist, and Dave Matthews is very, very funny in this movie.
He's going off. Like
he just goes for it, if you will.
I appreciated that.
And he's talking about how like, oh yeah, I'd love to. He's like, I'd love to both like Arabs and Jewish people, like getting them both at the same time. Like, oh wow, this is like it's like Christmas in July. He's like, right now we're scheduled to sabotage a Black People's Parade in Chicago, but we could move that. And I just wrote, Dave is very funny here. And Dave is like, I like you. You're a rich guy who gets it. You and Mel Gibson.
Jesus Christ.
Schneider and his friends call Hezbollah's hotline again. This time they're eating Sun Chips. And one of the biggest laughs that I got in this whole movie is the person on the other the automated like voicemail thing on the other end goes, your call will be answered in, and then just like in Arabic, like screams the number minutes. It's like that just knocked me out. Schneider dials the number and it's like the area code is like 26 digits long. Like, and the guy is telling him, they call the Phantom, who they tell him, like, Zohan is definitely alive. You should get down here. They call him on a Sony Ericsson phone. And then we cut to, all of a sudden, there's a big hacky sack tournament that the whole neighborhood is turning out to.
So much hacky sack.
The hacky sack, which we've obviously seen them playing earlier. There's a blind, before the hacky sack tournament, they announce that it's happening, and Zohan reads a blind item mentioning that the Phantom is coming to New York to kill him. Phantom gets this amazing, like, Rocky montage parody where he, like, he wakes up in the morning and he gets a glass and he cracks two eggs, but it's like full chicks come out of the glass, and he drinks them down. He's fighting, like, a slab of beef. And then he's fighting like a slab of beef with a little more skin on it. And then he's just fighting a live cow that's hanging upside down. And he punches the cow and the cow moves at him. And John Turturro like freaks out and he's screaming, which is great. Zohan tells all his friends that he is Zohan. Lainey Kazan says she knew the whole time because he was circumcised. He tells Dahlia and she is like, we can't be together because if my brother learned about us, like, he would lose his mind. She gives him a new Paul Mitchell book, with like new hairstyles. Then we get all these Israeli Americans gearing up because they fear, you know, an ambush at the hacky sack tournament. Mm-hmm. So they, are pulling guns out. We get like a Papaya King, which is a real place in New York, and that's product placement watch. You get like, there's like grenades in the deep fryer and like assault weapons, like in like the shawarma machine and stuff like that. At the hacky sack tournament, they're shooters in position. Smigel is there selling fizzy bubbla to people. But who else should be in the audience but Kevin James and John McEnroe, mm-hmm. two Sandler Squad members, alums.
They were just free for a day,
right. Mariah Carey comes out to sing the national anthem. And we've, obviously everyone, that's another joke that maybe Israelis and Palestinians both love Mariah Carey, and that's a very specific cultural reference. It almost seems to be, but I don't know.
I mean, I
don't know how to go about researching that.
I mean, it doesn't have to be any any deeper meaning. Mariah brings people together.
That's true.
It's true then. It's true now.
There's a very funny bit after the Israel team scores one goal. And it flashes on the scoreboard, disco break. And everyone, not just the players, but everyone starts getting down to like, disco, disco, good, disco, disco. Including John McEnroe and Kevin James. And John McEnroe at one point takes his shirt off and is like spinning it around his head. At this point, I'm like 110% on board with this movie. I'm like, this is the best. Mariah Carey is signing things for people. Phantom is there. Zohan drops in. They kind of have this like, back and forth with Mariah Carey present. They talk about the wonders of the Sony Ericsson phone because it has Bluetooth, and they tell her that they tell Mariah Carey that she should add them on MySpace. Product placement watch also comes back in Funny People. So Dave Matthews' whole crew is destroying stuff on the block. And so Schwartzen calls and tells Zohan that. So Zohan rushes to the scene. There's a store burning. Phantom goes in to punch and kick the fire. Mm-hmm. Zohan gets a huge like trash can full of hummus and hooks up a fire hose to it and sprays the hummus to put out the fire. And then Zohan refuses to fight Phantom because he's now a man of peace and a hairdresser making the world silky smooth. Dahlia shows up, and of course, it turns out that Dahlia and Phantom are siblings.
Twist.
you know, she's talking about how, no, like, here in America, we're the Israelis and Palestinians out on the street are talking about, like, realizing, like, no, here in America, we're the same, like, that, like, that was, it was this rich guy who did this to us. Very class consciousness. It's this false conflict between these people who their class interests are naturally aligned against the big businessman, but they're kept down by these petty feuds. Please invite me on Chapo Trap House to talk about You Don't Mess with the Zohan. They have a conversation about ever since September 11th, people think that we're terrorists, and the Israelis are like, yeah, people think that we're you, who they think are terrorists. And Schneider is like, how can I not hate Zohan? And he took my goat, and Zohan is like, I did, but I treated that goat like my own family. You know, I fed him this, and I would, and if I scratch him under his beard, he would give me this look. And Rob Schneider's like, oh, he gave you the look. I found this weirdly touching. Like, I found this, like, weirdly, like, oh, this is so nice. Like,
it reminded me of my relationship with dogs and or goats.
That's right. So then Zohan puts on, back to the business at hand, Zohan puts on these special goggles to spy on Dave Matthews. And one of the best jokes in the movie, which is, it gives this like Terminator style readout of Dave Matthews' character,
Hates,
and his name is James T. O'Scanlan, and his Hates. I wrote all this down. Hates the Jews, the Arabs, the Blacks, the Yellows, the French, the Latins, the New York Times, the George Clooney, the Hillary, the Obama, the Whole Foods, the Prius, the dogs in purses, the Oprah, the Ellen, the condoms, and sunsets on the beach. Likes, Lethal Weapon 1, the Lethal Weapon 1, the Lethal Weapon 2, the Lethal Weapon 3, and What Women Want. And then it says, I like all the unnecessary articles. Occupation, fake Arab for the wall bridge.
I like how he prefers What Women Want, presumably, to Lethal Weapon 4.
Exactly.
No one likes Lethal Weapon 4.
When Michael Buffer calls Dave and is just like, oh, like, what's the story? Like, what's going on with this? And he's just, Dave says, don't worry, sir, we're drawing him in like a... We're drawing them in like a hungry homo to the back of a hot dog factory.
Which I know, just saying it out loud, that line sounds stupid as hell.
It's so funny.
With Dave doing this ridiculous cracker-ass redneck voice, oh, God, it's good.
Zohan and Phantom go off to fight these racists. Phantom reveals that his dream is to sell shoes. He likes shoes the way that Zohan likes hair. As they're fighting people... they're talking about this as they're like beating up these henchmen. At one point, Zohan is kicking someone with, at one point, both of his feet are not touching the ground anymore, but like he's kicking one dude and the other foot, the Phantom is measuring it for a shoe. The news channel reveals with the insanely inflammatory headline, race war, ? The news is reporting on this conflict, and Rob Schneider is like, no, it was this man, like this land developer, Wallbridge, who's doing it to us. By the way, I love Mariah Carey. And Mariah Carey is just like, I love you too, horny little man. Buy my new album. And then we get to my favorite joke in the movie, and it's one of my favorite line readings, like from a comedy of the aughts. Which is Dave walks up. Dahlia is just like, Zohan, no, look out. He has a bomb and puppies. And he's got like this stick of TNT with a timer in it. And he, in one hand, in his other hand, he has a crate full of these beautiful little puppies. And Dave just goes, I'm going to blow up this whole block. I'm going to blow you up. I'm going to blow up all these people, and we go to hell together because I hate these puppies. And former friend of the show, former guest, Danny Benson, huge Dave Matthews fan. When I watched this, I watched that scene like a few months ago, and I filmed it and texted it to him, and he told me, he said, I was working in a movie theater when that film came out, and I knew exactly when I could go in to see it. Like, I knew the timing of it. So Zohan and Phantom decide to, they have to make the sound, which is just them chanting together.
One does like harmony, one does melody.
Yep. I get they sing, and something that's so great about this movie and this style of humor is that it's like crazy cartoonish shit can happen.
Yeah.
They sing and it blows out all these windows, and it Dave is standing on a manhole, and the cover of the manhole pops it, like shoots up into the air like a rocket.
Very Looney Tunes.
And it throws Dave Matthews into an apartment. And inside the apartment, it's an apartment full of gay men. Mm. And inside the apartment, he lands in between George Takei and Bruce Valanche. And they're just like, and George Takei's
hello.
Oh, hello. What have we here? Like, you're cute. And then the puppies also land in there. And all of the gay men are just like, oh my God, puppies.
Yay, wow. Puppies.
They're clapping. And Dave looks like, Dave's like, like screaming. He's been vanquished. And then it also destroys Michael Buffer's girlfriend's fake breasts. Like, the singing pops them. And I do like that that's the last we see of Michael Buffer's character, is him going, no, my life is ruined. The ratio. It was perfect.
So stupid.
It's so dumb. And then we cut to, you know, a little while later, the Peace and Brotherhood Fire Insurance Mall has now opened on this block, and it's owned and operated by everyone we've seen so far. We've got Phantom has a shoe store, Schneider has a goat ride place, and I guess Jackie Sandler and Sadie, you said, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sadie Sandler are both there. The going out of business store is doing business. And then there's the salon where now Nick Swartzen is a hairdresser flirting with ladies. And we conclude with Zohan's mom and dad show up, and they're like, oh, like, you know, so, and they make a joke, that same joke, like, oh, have you told your wife that you're a Fagala? And he's just like, oh, and then the dad's like, cut my hair. And we exit on that. And everyone leaves the theater happy, because this is a great movie, guys.
Mm-hmm.
I love this movie. It was a big, big hit. Made $100 million in the States, made about that much overseas, too. And I think that this movie should be talked about more. I think it's great.
One thing I love about this movie is, and again, like, we have maybe one of the strongest, like, screenplay by credits here in all of Sandler's career. I mean, Sandler, Judd Apatow, and Robert Smigel, that's, you know, these are some heavy hitters. And these are guys whose, obviously, careers overlap in many ways that are important and interesting that we will continue to talk about during this podcast. These are guys whose careers have their own directions separate from one another. What I love about this movie is that I can't necessarily point to one, like, specific joke. Like, let's say Dave Matthews, and like, oh my God, we're going to hell together, and these puppies. Like, I can't point to that and be like, oh, that rings of Sandler, or that rings of Apatow. It, like, all, like, this whole thing feels like all of them meshed together,
yeah,
very beautifully. And yeah, it's a lot of fun to rewatch, because, like I said, like, they really pack in as many gags, lines, and sight jokes as possible. The, you know, you can call it, I guess, simplistic if you want to, and I suppose it is, but the good naturedness of this movie is nice, and considering that Sandler's no stranger to, like, cultural stereotypes and occasional insensitivity. The fact that this movie, I think, has a good heart to it goes a long way.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, disco, disco. Yeah,
disco,
yeah.
Disco. Good, disco, good. Disco, good, good. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's weird because, I mean, Bedtime Stories is the weird blind spot for me. And once I've seen that, that will officially be the last Adam Sandler movie that I have not seen. Like, that'll be finally checking off all the boxes. But considering, accepting that movie, that, you know, like, basically, like, we're coming right up on Funny People, you know, it feels like, and we can do this more in our Bedtime Stories episode, but it's like, you know, taking stock of Sandler's career up till that point,
yeah,
where it's about to, like, Funny People is, like, a very interesting demarcation line. And I think that, you know, if it's not a perfect like split, because obviously post Funny People he makes a few more happy Madison comedies in theaters, but it's like, you know, this uninterrupted run of Sandler being like king of the world, mm-hmm. And it's like those comedies. I mean, it's interrupted with Little Nicky, but whatever. It's like Zohan. It's like, wow, like it's almost like you saved. I prefer Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, but in a way, in terms of like the extent to which the idea has been, the comedic idea existed and was developed for the movie, it's like, it's almost like they like kind of nailed it. Like they'd been like building up to this, yes, or something. Like, I think that like there's a confidence to this, a sort of like, we can get away with this because that doesn't read as like, oh, we can get away with being, it's not laziness. It's like, we can just do like this silly bullshit because we know we're guaranteed $100 million.
Yeah. This feels like every joke is thrown at it, and most of them land like very well.
Yeah. It's got a rapid fire, like joke pace. Like very few of them are like kind of cringy. Like even, you know, Chuck and Larry, a movie I keep saying I liked more than I had remembered. There's a handful of moments in that where you're like, you know, okay, you know, whatever. But here, you know, that mostly doesn't happen. Like there are a few things where I'm like, oh, you do that differently now.
Sure.
But it's very well done. It's surprisingly for Dennis Dugan, apologies to Dennis Dugan, but it's like surprisingly well directed.
Yes.
It's, you know, with, for both comedy and the occasional action beats. And it's sort of, I mean, obviously it's the first time that Apatow and Sandler had worked together officially, like with Apatow credited. I mean, right, he might have like done some work beforehand. Like, this is the first time they had worked in film together.
Yeah, I think like he, you know, he definitely has done like punch up work on previous screenplays and projects, but like, yeah, official capacity.
And I think, and I should say, because I don't think I made this clear earlier, it's like talking about Judd Apatow and his involvement in this. Like, my understanding when the movie came out was that the reason the movie got made, or one of the reasons the script got taken off the pile, was because Judd Apatow had just like blown up.
Yeah.
So it was just like, oh, like all of a sudden they're much more willing to consider a script that's written by the guy who's just had these two big hits.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, this movie it came out in 2008. It opened like $40 million opening weekend, which is crazy. And yeah, I think overall it's very, very successful. And it has been since theaters that I've watched this all the way through. And so I'm definitely going to make sure that doesn't happen again. I'm going to make sure to revisit this one in the near future.
Is this one of the, like, talking to people about this one, is this one of the ones in like the middle tier? Because, like, you know, a lot of people will cite Little Nicky as like, oh, that was the bad one.
You find love it or hate it on that one, honestly. Because like I feel like I've talked to as many people who really like Little Nicky as do not. Like it's because I'm always like, I always have to watch myself bad mouthing Little Nicky around people because people are like, what? I love that movie. And I'm like, oh, okay, never mind.
Is this one of like the mid range?
I think so.
Stuff?
Like, as much as it's like thought the, about, I think yeah. like I think that it's like it's not like yeah. And I feel like we should like maybe like. Maybe like before we record next, we should like try and define that a little bit, where it's like, what do we think just based by like popular acclaim, like what's in the, or critical acclaim, like what's like top tier, bottom tier, like somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
Cause like, I can't, cause like, obviously, you know, like as much, no matter how much we will disagree, like obviously Jack and Jill and Grown Ups 2 are considered bottom tier.
Yeah. As is Click. I think people just the high concept of like guy with a remote, people are just like, nope.
Yeah. But I think this one, if they think of it at all, is kind of just like, oh yeah, that one, like whatever. Like that was just kind of like a weird, like it doesn't even have the, like with, like if anyone remembers I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry,
it's like, ah,
it's like, oh, that's the one that, oh, that's kind of cringy.
Schneider,
he made a movie about
gay
rights or whatever. Yeah. And Rob Schneider in it. And it's like, but this, I feel like no one ever quotes anything from it. No one ever, like it just, no one talks about revisiting it. It's just sort of like a weird asterisk where it's like, remember that he made a Israeli espionage hairdresser sex comedy.
And I feel like it's almost better today than it was in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Like recalling, I mean, it's funny how many of the jokes are actually like stronger. I felt like Dave Matthews was like, holy shit. This
yeah.
is like current day.
Yeah. No, yeah,
like,
no.
Trump supporter.
Exactly. No, absolutely. Yeah. The stuff that he's like, yeah. No, I agree with you 100%.
The fact that he doesn't say fake news once is kind of crazy.
Right. You know? Yeah, totally.
He absolutely would if the movie were made today.
100%. So let's see. We've got our categories. So Sandler Squad, correct as usual. Correct me if I miss anybody. I have got John Turturro. I have got Nick Swardson. I have got, where are they? Chris Rock. I have got Rob Schneider.
Yours.
I have got Robert Smigel. I have got Henry Winkler.
Mm-hmm. Kevin James and
Kevin James, John McEnroe.
Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon.
Did you get Dave Matthews?
Dave Matthews. Yeah. And I believe that is it for the Sandler Squad. Pretty sure that's it for Sandler Squad. Because yeah. Neither Bruce Valanche nor George Takei were in another one.
Jackie Sandler and Sadie.
Jackie Sandler and Sadie are in there. Product placement watch.
Oh, Dennis Dugan's in it, too.
Oh, right. Dennis Dugan plays a homeless man, which none of us noticed him there, but he's on IMDb, so that's Sandler Squad.
He gets himself, like, more and more, like less roles, because, like, he's playing, like, almost, like, a fourth lead, or, like, a fifth lead in Happy Gilmore.
Right.
And then in Big Daddy, he's, like, just random rich neighbor, and then so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I forgot the really, like, cranky old man from, he's in Big Daddy. His name's Edmund Leindeck. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah,
he's the
sure.
pharmacist.
Mr. Oh, is he the one who's like, hell yes. Like,
Mr. Herlihy is his name in Big Daddy.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, in that case, the Hayes Sandler Squad. Yeah. Welcome to the squad, sir.
I mean, that's his second and final appearance.
Well, okay. it counts. He's in.
Yeah.
So product placement watch. I was distraught to learn that Fizzy Bubula is not product placement.
It is a vape juice.
Made up. Really? Wow. So there are, you know what? This has seeped into the culture.
Yeah.
There is, it's kind of sparse, honestly. We've got Tribe Hummus, which I had to look up to make sure that was a real brand. You've got, you've got Dunkin' Donuts. You get Sun Chips. You get Baked Lays. You get Neosporin. You got Maalox.
You got Mariah Carey.
Sony Ericsson phones. Mm.
Paul Mitchell.
Paul Mitchell, MySpace. I guess there's more than I thought. Yeah, I mean, they mention, it's not really product placement. I mean, they're mentioning like Toshibas and Sonys and stuff, but that's just brand names. It's not really they're not selling the products. Papaya King.
Yeah.
Product placement watch. I think I said MySpace, which again comes back in Funny People. And then Slumming Love Interest, I guess this is one of the ones where it doesn't quite apply, because neither, like, I don't think it's not the kind of role that feels like, I mean, it is a little bit thankless in that she is the love interest and she's not like, she doesn't get to be funny like the rest of the cast does. So in that sense, I guess maybe the category applies. Emmanuelle Chicri, lovely woman. She's good in this movie. Mm-hmm. So I guess she fits the bill.
She's
but
not made to fawn over Zohan though. Like for
right, she's not like it's not like a. In fact, she's so skeptical of him, and because of the weird reality in which this movie exists, her warming to him doesn't feel as ridiculous as say Veronica Vaughn or Virginia Vennett,
right?
Or the most egregious example, Joey Lauren Adams in Big Daddy, where it's like, no, I'm sorry, I don't believe this for one second. Not based on the character that you have just shown.
I think it's cool. You only work one day a week. No, you don't.
Absolutely.
You're successful.
I'm a high powered lawyer who's trying to make it in the city.
He works in a toll booth.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's great that you only work one day. No.
No. You be nice to him when you saw him at the park, and that's it. You're not going on a date with that guy.
Yeah, you would be regretting that for sure. It would be like a knocked up situation, like that he's the Seth Rogen. But yeah, so I guess that about does it for our chat on You Don't Mess with Zohan. Are there any closing thoughts on this one? Anything other than, I mean, we all kind of all just really liked it.
This was a pleasant revisit. I would happily watch this again tomorrow, and I might like just,
yeah. I mean, hell, it's on Netflix. It might just be like a throw it on like
couldn't hurt.
Sort of thing. You just like let it run in the background while you're like doing your taxes. But yeah, Austin, was there anything that came to mind for you? Like,
no, I was very, very happy to see that this was still very funny.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the biggest, like in terms of like scope of the project, like in terms of like the script, one of the bigger comedies that he's got for a while.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's definitely like his like the highest concept thing that he has for a little bit. I guess. Well, Bedtime Story is a pretty high concept.
Oh
but
yeah, I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah, as we are discussing it, we keep forgetting it.
It's gonna be interesting to dive into that thing. Yeah,
there's so many layers to that. I mean, not layers, but just so many types of stories from like Roman stories,
right,
like Ben-Hur and like all this kind of
stuff.
Can't
wait. It'll be great. All right, so that does it for our talk on You Don't Mess with the Zohan. Thank you so much for listening to the Billy Gilmore podcast. I am your host, Wilson Smith.
This is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
And join us next time for our sure-to-be thrilling review of Bedtime Stories. Tune in then. Look forward to it. Have a good one.